Chapter 7. The Big C. It was warm and sunny out, a day just like one would expect for the time of year. There was a calm, gentle breeze that broke the intensity of the sun. It was, by all accounts, a perfect day. All of a sudden, out of the corner of an eye, the calm was shattered. Perhaps it was the rustle of the grass, or maybe he thought he saw something. He couldn't be sure, but frankly, it didn't matter. All that mattered was that there might have been something out there, something dangerous, something deadly. The anxiety alone was quite enough for the gazelle to stop grazing and immediately lift its head to try to see what it hoped was not a lion. Another gazelle noticed that one of the members of its group was alerted to a possible threat, and it too immediately stopped eating and looked up. Two sets of eyes are better than one. Before too long, the whole group had joined in. None of them knew specifically what they were looking for. They only knew that if one of the members of the group felt threatened, they should all feel threatened. Then, in an instant, one of the gazelles, one that wasn't originally alerted to the potential threat, saw the lion about to pounce and instinctively made a mad dash in the opposite direction. Whether they also saw the lion or not, all the gazelles in the herd followed in the same direction, all running at full speed. The lion attempted to give chase, but couldn't run for long before it ran out of energy. The surprise attack was foiled, and all the gazelles got to live another day. This is one of the primary benefits of group living. Every member of the group can help look out for danger. If one individual in the group senses danger, the whole group can help spot it before it's too late. It is a familiar scene played out in many a nature documentary. Sometimes the lion makes the kill, and sometimes it doesn't. But the response from the gazelles is always the same. First, one or a few of them sense something is amiss. Then they try to get a bead on the threat, and if there is a threat, they run for their lives. It is that initial feeling, that sense that something might be out there that would do them harm, that sets the whole scene in motion, and at the end of the day gives the herd a greater opportunity for survival. That feeling that something is wrong is a natural early warning system all social mammals have, including us. It is designed to alert us to threats and heighten our senses to prepare us for possible danger. Absent that feeling, we would only be alerted to danger when we actually saw something or when the attack had already begun. And from a survival standpoint, that probably would be too late. Those 22 Special Operations Forces in Afghanistan that Johnny Bravo risked his life to protect are a perfect example. They could feel something wasn't right that night. That gut feeling that they, the gazelle, and the rest of us get that something dangerous is lurking is caused by a chemical called cortisol. Cortisol is responsible for the stress and anxiety we experience when something goes bump in the night. It is the first level of our fight or flight response. Like a high-security alarm system that automatically calls the police, cortisol is designed to alert us to possible danger and prepare us to take extra measures to protect ourselves to raise our chances of survival. Apply the same scene of the gazelles to an office scenario. One person hears a rumor that there are going to be layoffs. He tells a friend at work, and before too long, just like the herd of gazelle, one by one, the word spreads and the whole office starts chatting and worrying, anxious about the impending layoffs. All the employees have a heightened sense of alertness thanks to the cortisol flowing through their veins. The stress they feel will distract them from getting anything else done until they feel that the threat has passed. In the event of an actual threat, like police responding to an alarm, adrenaline is released into our bloodstream, giving us energy to get away or boost our strength to face our foe. If you've ever heard stories of mothers who suddenly gain superhuman strength to save their children, that comes from adrenaline. But if there is no threat, we take a deep breath, wait for the cortisol to leave our bloodstream, allow our heart rate to return to normal, and relax again. Cortisol is not supposed to stay in our systems. It is supposed to fire off when we sense a threat and then leave when the threat has passed. And for good reason. The stress on our bodies is serious. The manner in which it reconfigures our internal systems can cause lasting damage if we have to live in a perpetual state of fear or anxiety. We all know what cortisol feels like when we fear for our well-being. But it is also behind the feelings of anxiety, discomfort, or stress we have at work. Unlike gazelles, humans have sophisticated neocortices, the part of our brain responsible for language, as well as rational, analytical, and abstract thought. Whereas a gazelle reacts to the cortisol on their bodies, we as humans want to know the cause of our stress, to understand or make sense of our feelings. We often try to find the source of what we think is threatening us, real or perceived, to explain our unease. We may blame a boss who lies to us. We may blame a colleague who we fear would stab us in the back to advance their own career. We may beat ourselves up for speaking out of turn at a meeting. We cycle through any number of things we did or did not do to help us understand why we feel anxious. The paranoia cortisol creates is just doing its job. It is trying to get us to find the threat and prepare for it. Fight, run, or hide. Whether the danger is real or imagined, the stress we feel is real. Unlike our rational minds, our bodies do not try to assess what the danger is. We simply react to the chemicals flowing through our bloodstreams to prepare us for what might be lurking. Our Paleolithic brain doesn't care about understanding the threat. It just wants us to increase our chance of survival. What's more, our bodies don't understand that we work in offices and not in open savannas. Our ancient early warning system doesn't understand that the danger we face is hardly life-threatening, which is why, in an effort to help protect our interests, that system prompts us to react as if it were. A friend of mine who works at Columbia University went to an office to fill out some administrative paperwork. He was polite and friendly to the young woman sitting at the desk, but she wasn't polite or friendly back. Though she didn't say anything rude or wrong, he could sense that she wasn't that concerned about him or his needs. She answered his questions with a word or two, and didn't give him any extra help or directions beyond what was minimally required, even when he asked. When he engaged with the next person, again, he felt like he had somehow bothered or upset him simply by asking him to do what was his job. Although, as employees of the same organization, it was in their mutual interest to assist him, the clerical staff seemed ambivalent about, even resistant to cooperating. In an office like the one my friend stepped into, people would prefer to keep to themselves, engage only when necessary, do their work, and go home at the end of the day. There is no sense that anyone would risk themselves or go out of their way to offer protection to another. And because of this, though there is no threat of layoffs and the work stress is low, there is a constant low-grade anxiety. As social animals, we feel stress when we feel unsupported. That subconscious unease, the feeling that we are responsible for ourselves and no one else is there to help, the feeling we get that most of the people with whom we work care primarily about themselves, is, to our primitive brain, quite scary. And the problem is not with the people, it's with the environment. When a gazelle senses trouble, it alerts the rest of its herd, increasing the chances of survival of all. Unfortunately, many of us work in environments where members of the group don't care much about one another's fate. Which means that valuable information, like impending danger, is often kept secret. As a result, bonds of trust among employees or between leaders and workers are weak, if they exist at all. We are all left almost without an option but to put ourselves first. If we fear our boss doesn't like us, if we are constantly worried that if we make a mistake, we will get in trouble, if we think that someone we work with will try to take credit for something we did or stab us in the back to get ahead, if we pay attention to too much media hype, if we fear the company isn't going to make its numbers this year and layoffs may be around the corner, if people are generally disengaged, if we do not feel the circle of safety, cortisol starts to seep through our veins. Drip, drip, drip. This is a serious problem. For one thing, cortisol actually inhibits the release of oxytocin, the chemical responsible for empathy. This means that when there is only a weak circle of safety and people must invest time and energy to guard against politics and other dangers inside the company, it actually makes us even more selfish and less concerned about one another or the organization. Working in an unhealthy, unbalanced culture is a lot like climbing Mount Everest. We adapt to our surroundings. Even though the conditions are dangerous, climbers know to spend time at base camp to adapt. In time, their bodies will get accustomed to the conditions so that they can persevere. We do the same thing in an unhealthy culture. If the conditions were violent or shocking, with a threat of layoffs every single day, we would never stay. But when the conditions are more subtle, things like office politics, opportunism, occasional rounds of layoffs, and a general lack of trust among colleagues, we adapt. Like being at base camp on Everest, we believe that we're fine and can cope. However, the fact remains that the human animal is not built for these conditions. Even though we may think we're comfortable, the effects of the environment still take their toll. Just because we become accustomed, just because it becomes normal, doesn't mean it's acceptable. On Everest, even after we've adapted, if we spend too long on the mountain, our internal organs start to break down. In an unhealthy culture, it's the same. Even though we can get used to living with stress and low, regular levels of cortisol in our bodies, that doesn't mean we should. A constant flow of cortisol isn't just bad for organizations. It can also do serious damage to our health. Like the other selfish chemicals, cortisol can help us survive, but it isn't supposed to be in our system all the time. It wreaks havoc with our glucose metabolism. It also increases blood pressure and inflammatory responses and impairs cognitive ability. It's harder to concentrate on things outside the organization if we're stressed about what's going on inside. Cortisol increases aggression, suppresses our sex drive, and generally leaves us feeling stressed out. And here's the killer, literally. Cortisol prepares our bodies to react suddenly, to fight or run as circumstances demand. Because this takes lots of energy, when we feel threatened, our bodies turn off non-essential functions, such as digestion or growth. Once the stress has passed, these systems are turned on again. Unfortunately, the immune system is one of the functions the body deems non-essential, so it shuts down during cortisol bursts. In other words, if we work in environments in which trust is low, relationships are weak or transactional, and stress and anxiety are normal, we become much more vulnerable to illness. Whereas oxytocin boosts our immune system, cortisol compromises it. That our modern world has seen high rates of cancer, diabetes, heart disease, and other preventable illnesses may not be a coincidence. Today, these conditions are far more likely to kill us than threats like violent crime or terrorism. The National Counterterrorism Center estimates that more than 12,500 people were killed worldwide by terrorists in 2011. According to FBI statistics, about 165,000 people were murdered in the United States between 2000 and 2010. More than two-thirds of them with a firearm. FBI statistics do not include Florida. Compare those numbers to the 600,000 people who die every year in the United States from heart disease and the additional nearly 600,000 people who died of cancer in 2012, and the evidence becomes stark. Think about that. 7 times more people die each year from heart disease and cancer than all the people murdered in a decade. Of course, stress alone is not causing all these deaths, but the numbers are so huge and growing, it seems only responsible for the leaders of organizations to take some accountability for how they may be contributing. That something as simple as a corporate incentive system or a corporate culture is actually contributing to these statistics is horrifying. Our jobs are literally killing us. In contrast, a strong organizational culture is good for our health. The environment in which we work and the way we interact with one another really matters. A good working environment helps ensure that we can build the bonds of trust required for effective cooperation. Because our ancient legacy systems can't distinguish between the threats we may have faced in the wilds of the Paleolithic era and the perceived threats we face in a modern work environment, the response is the same. Our bodies release cortisol to help us stay alive. If we work in an environment in which leadership tells the truth, in which layoffs are not the default in hard times, and in which incentive structures do not pit us against each other, the result, thanks to increased levels of oxytocin and serotonin, is trust and cooperation. This is what work-life balance means. It has nothing to do with the hours we work or the stress we suffer. It has to do with where we feel safe. If we feel safe at home, but we don't feel safe at work, then we will suffer what we perceive to be a work-life imbalance. If we have strong relationships at home and at work, if we feel like we belong, if we feel protected in both, then the powerful forces of a magical chemical like oxytocin can diminish the effects of stress and cortisol. With trust, we do things for each other, look out for each other, and sacrifice for each other, all of which adds up to our sense of security inside a circle of safety. We have a feeling of comfort and confidence at work that reduces the overall stress we feel because we do not feel our well-being is threatened. Fire your children. Charlie Kim could sense the tension. Like clockwork, as the end of each fiscal year approached, the feeling around the office would change. It was fear. fear that if the company didn't make its numbers, some of the people might not make it to the next year. Kim, who founded NextJump nearly 20 years ago, has been through many ups and downs with the company and knows full well the stunting effects that fear or paranoia can wreak on a business. And so he made a bold decision that would dramatically enhance the circle of safety at NextJump. "We want NextJump to be a company that our mothers and fathers would be proud of us building," says Kim. "And a large part of making our parents proud comes in the form of being a good person and doing the right thing." And so he implemented a policy of lifetime employment. NextJump may be the only tech company in the country to do such a thing. No one will get fired to balance the books. And even costly mistakes or poor individual performance are not grounds for dismissal. If anything, the company will spend the time to help figure out what the problem is and help its people overcome it. Like an athlete who goes through a slump, a NextJumper doesn't get fired, they get coached. About the only situation in which an employee would be asked to leave is if they worked outside the company's high moral values or if someone actively worked to undermine their colleagues. It's not as crazy as it sounds. Because it is nearly impossible to get fired once you're in, NextJump takes much more time and is a lot more discerning about who they hire than a lot of other companies in the industry. They don't just consider skills and experience. They spend a lot of time evaluating the character of the candidates who want to work there. For every 100 candidates, only one will get a job. If a leader was told from here on you can't fire anyone, Kim explains, but you must still meet consistent growth in revenue and profits despite market conditions, they would have no choice but to turn to other variables within their control, like hiring, training, and development. Once someone gets in, the leaders of NextJump make it their priority to help the person grow. If they are offering an opportunity for lifetime employment for those who want it, then the leaders of the company have to work hard to bring in the right people. Firing is an easy option, Kim explains. Tough love, coaching, even a program to help people find a job somewhere else if they decide our company is not for them, are all much more effective, but require much more time and attention from the company. To Kim, raising children has many lessons for running a company. Both require a balancing of short-term needs and long-term goals. First and foremost, your commitment is to them for life, Kim says. Ultimately, you want them to become better people. Kim thinks of his employees exactly the same way. He knows most people would never get rid of their children during hard times, so how can we lay off our people under the same conditions, he asks. Despite how much we may fight with our siblings, we can't get rid of family. We have to make it work. Though he may not be the perfect boss or the perfect parent, none of us are, few can dispute how much Kim cares and how hard he works to do the right thing, even if that sometimes means admitting when he gets it wrong. One engineer at the company said that he initially thought the lifetime employment policy was a nice idea for some of the lower performing people, but not much consequence for him, one of the top performers. He wasn't afraid that he would lose his job. What he didn't expect, however, was how much the policy would help him as a group leader. After the policy was implemented, his team started communicating much more openly. Mistakes and problems were pointed out more quickly, long before they escalated. Information sharing and cooperation increased too. Simply because his team no longer feared for their jobs, this group leader saw the performance of his whole team skyrocket. In fact, the performance of the whole company skyrocketed. In the years before the new policy, average revenue growth at NextJump was 25% per year. With no other major changes since lifetime employment was offered, revenue growth has jumped to 60% per year and shows no sign of slowing. Even though many of the engineers at NextJump get job offers from Google or Facebook or other big tech companies, they don't leave. NextJump used to see a 40% turnover among their engineers, a number on par with the industry. With a greater focus on building their people, NextJump now has a turnover rate of just 1%. It turns out, even when offered big titles and bigger salaries, people would rather work at a place in which they feel like they belong. People would rather feel safe among their colleagues, have the opportunity to grow and feel a part of something bigger than themselves than work in a place that simply makes them rich. This is what happens when human beings, even engineers, are put in an environment for which we were designed. We stay. We remain loyal. We help each other and we do our work with pride and passion. When the time is taken to build proper relationships and when leaders choose to put their people before their numbers, when we can actually feel a sense of trust for each other, the oxytocin released in our bodies can reverse many of the negative effects of operating in a high-stress, cortisol-soaked environment. In other words, it's not the nature of the work we do or the number of hours we work that will help reduce stress and achieve our work-life balance. It's increased amounts of oxytocin and serotonin. Serotonin boosts our self-confidence and inspires us to help those who work for us and make proud those for whom we work. Oxytocin relieves stress, increases our interest in our work, and improves our cognitive abilities, making us better able to solve complex problems. It boosts our immune systems, lowers blood pressure, increases our libido, and actually lessens our cravings and addictions. And best of all, it inspires us to work together. This is the reason people who love their jobs, a very oxytocin thing to say, can easily turn down a job that pays more to stay at the job they love. Compared to a culture in which the leaders incentivize reactionary decisions or activities that focus on immediate gratification, a culture in which the selfless chemicals can flow more freely results in greater organizational stability and better long-term performance. And when that happens, our bonds grow stronger, our loyalties grow deeper, and the organization gains longevity. Best of all, we go home happier and live longer and healthier as a result. This kind of culture is possible in any industry of any size. As long as there are human beings brought together for a common cause, leaders can choose to set the kind of culture they want. There is no upheaval or layoffs required for this. The talent pool does not need to be replaced. Those who don't embrace the values that define the culture may feel the cortisol in their bodies, telling them that they don't belong. Feeling the anxiety of being an outsider in the group, they may decide to find a place in which they are a better fit. The others, in contrast, will feel safe among their colleagues. They will feel like they have found a home. All that is required to accomplish this is for the leaders of a company to make the decision to do it. They have the power to create an environment in which people will naturally thrive and advance the good of the organization itself. Once the culture and the values are clearly defined, it becomes the responsibility of all those who belong, whether in formal positions of leadership or not, to act like leaders, to work to uphold the values and keep the circle of safety strong.